Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, May 14th, 2012. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. Today's show is being brought to you by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers who want to write a book to attract more clients and increase profits. Get your copy of the 7-Step Roadmap to Publishing Success, now available at www.abookin90days.com. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, What Happens When Computing Puts Humans First, with my guest, author, speaker, and researcher, Lisa Kaczmarczyk. Welcome to all of you, my listeners, first, because I want to let you know that I appreciate the time you've made to be with us. Now, you are, some of you listening live on the phone, a few of you are on the website, some of you are in the chat room, and many of you are listening to the archives after the fact. In any case, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Now, if you enjoy the show, don't keep it a secret. Tell others about it who can benefit. Now, thanks to modern technology, that's very easy to do. Over on my show page, blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, right under my photo, you will see several ways to keep up with the show. One of the easiest ways is to click that follow button, and each week you will get an announcement and a reminder in your email of the episodes. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. To get at that goal, each week I interview guests from many different fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, wealth creation, you name it. We talk about all of the things that contribute to lasting happiness. Today's episode is What Happens When Computing Puts Humans First, with my guest, Lisa Kaczmarczyk, a program evaluation consultant, user experience researcher, speaker, and author. Lisa is also an expert in using computers to make the world a better place. Lisa earned an interdisciplinary PhD from the University of Texas at Austin, combining computer science, mathematics and science education, and psychology. She is a prolific writer and has published numerous academic papers. She writes a magazine column and ponders topics ranging from hydrology to Buddhism on her interdisciplinary computing blog. Lisa serves on the Association for Computing Machinery Education Council, is an associate editor of En-ROADS magazine, and consults as an external evaluator for National Science Foundation-funded research. Her new book, Computers and Society, Computing for Good, profiles businesses, organizations, and entrepreneurs who are using computers to improve the lives of people and the environment. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today Lisa Kaczmarczyk. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Flora. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
And I'm happy that you were able to join us because this is a very important and compelling topic. Because no doubt computers have become, whether we like it or not, computers have become a big part of everyone's life. So this is exciting to me. I want to start by asking you, what made you write this book? How did you decide to write your book?
Well, I discovered something that was very disturbing, at least very disturbing to me. And that was when I would ask people, just in casual conversation, what do they think about when they hear the phrase computers and society? Hmm. And almost to a person, people outside the computer science community would think about things that go wrong. They would think about how people can get hurt, how damage is done. It was just relentlessly negative and very depressing. And it's also incredibly one-sided, and it's only half the story. It's not all true. And so I've gotten to know over the years many very passionate computer scientists who are out there making a living, you know, changing the world, making it a better place. And I wanted to get the word out to people that there are wonderful things that are happening with computer science. There's a positive side to it. I wanted to inspire people to think differently about what this phrase, computers in society, means. And mm-hmm. I figured one of the best ways to do that was to share the stories of people that are making a difference.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I started reading some of your stories, and I am just, it's amazing the wonderful things that we can do. And you're right, I think most people just have sort of a knee-jerk reaction to the when you put computing and humans and society together, and yet we rely on computers so much. So now, how did you choose the stories that you decided to include in the book?
Well, a lot of them, as I started getting the word out that I was interested in this, they started coming to me. But at mm-hmm. the same time, I had some criteria that I had in mind. There's three things, basically. They have to be an organization or a person that is clearly doing something with computers that benefits society or the environment. Mm-hmm. And it has to be something where people are making a living at it to show that, you know, you can do that. It's not just a side activity.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, computers really had to be at the center of it and not just kind of an add-on piece.
Okay.
And I was particularly interested in getting the attention of students who are studying for, you know, a technical degree or who are in business, because they're starting to make their decisions about what they're going to do with their lives. So I was choosing stories that I thought would also have a special appeal to them.
Those are excellent things to look at, because the making a living at it is important, so that you know this was this organization or person was doing a serious endeavor. It wasn't just a hobby or
mm-hmm.
something. And that the computers needed to be at the center of it, because most of us, we're all involved in computers in some way, but in some cases they're on the side.
Right.
And then your organizations needed to be doing something that would benefit society
right.
and mankind. That's great. Now, this is a big question I'm sure a lot of listeners are thinking, so I'm going to ask it for them.
Okay.
Do you have to have a technical background to read your book, Computers and Society?
No, you don't have to. If you do, I mean, it's helpful, but you absolutely don't. I have a friend who is really into medieval literature, and she's been reading it and telling me that she really likes it. And
mm-hmm.
one of the reasons that I think this works is because I wrote it so that the more technical pieces are in sidebars. And
okay.
so that you can read through every chapter, and if there's material that is more technical than you want to read and it's in the sidebars, you can pass by it and still get the entire story. But if you are technical and you have a very technical background, you really like that meaty stuff, you've got all that information there also.
Wow, that satisfies both groups, then, the people who want the technical part and those of us who want to know the stories. And
mm-hmm.
I bet you have a favorite story that you like to write. What was your favorite?
Gosh, that's always hard, and people ask me that. Because every single one of these stories grabbed me and just pulled me into people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one story that really stands out, and I got to know a married couple who had two children, twins, a boy and a girl, and they were born premature. They were born at 6 months, and that is about as early as we have any chance with current technology of helping babies to survive is at 6 months. And it's really on the edge. It's about 50% survive.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in the hospital in the neonatal intensive care unit for a very long time. And I think it was, well, I know it was from talking to them, it was hell for them. And at the same time, as they were watching all of this going on and wondering if their kids were going to survive, the husband is a computer scientist, and he was noticing some amazing technology that was in the hospital. And they were at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which is one of the largest, most state-of-the-art children's hospitals in North America. And so after they had gotten through, you know, this really terrible experience, and their kids are fine, by the way, he started telling me about the technology in the hospital and all the computer stuff and how exciting and fascinating it was. And I got introduced to the people at the hospital and learned about an amazing project they were doing with their digital images. And so I got to go in there and learn about what the hospital was doing with their images and to help patient care and to help these premature babies survive. Mm-hmm. And I got to meet the company that they were teaming with, the high-tech company that, mm-hmm. that the hospital worked with. And so the whole story was very, you know, personally, was on a gut level. See, I even have trouble talking about it sometimes. Mm-hmm. It was very, very moving, but it was also technically fascinating. And I got to meet the kids. And, aww. Yeah, so I think that one really stands out.
That's so beautiful because there's so much, I would imagine, going on that we don't know about, where computers are doing the exact type of thing that you discovered, and that is that are saving lives, helping ease pain, and doing all kinds of things that we aren't aware of in the regular everyday world. So your
That's
book
really
is very
true.
Important to pull this out for us to see, because I can't imagine anyone thinking negative about a computer once they learn about the digital imaging and learn about how these twins were saved and their lives were enhanced. Mm-hmm. And comforting the parents, because I am a parent, so I can imagine how distressed the parents must have been. So nobody could think negative about a computer after they hear this story.
No, so, and everybody was so passionate. I mean, the doctors were passionate. The people working in the high-tech company were passionate. I mean, everybody, their whole focus was really on, you know, the end result, which was the people and the children and the parents. And the computers were behind the scenes, so you don't mm-hmm. ever directly see them, but they had an enormous impact on
yeah.
these people's lives.
Wow, that's beautiful. Now, before we get too far along, I want to have you tell people how they can buy your book and or contact you for a speaking engagement.
Oh, okay. Well, the book is on Amazon, so you can get it there. And if there's anybody who wants to use it in the college classroom, I have a website which has a link on it to the publisher, and the website is www.computersandsociety.com, and there's a dash in between each of the words, computers-and-society.
Okay.
And my email is Lisa, followed by the first four letters of my last name, K-A, C as in cat, Z as in zebra, @gmail.com. So lisakaz@gmail.com.
Okay. So let me repeat what I have. So to get your book, they can just dash on over to Amazon and
mm-hmm.
Put in your Computers and Society, your book title.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or go to your website, www.computers-and-society.com, or email you at
right.
Lisa, LISAKAZY,
KACZ.
Oh, CZ, okay. I'm glad I repeated that. All right, hold on. Let me back up. Lisa, KACZ, @gmail.com.
Exactly.
Right?
CZ. Yep, that's it. Yeah, I have a tough name.
Okay, that's okay. That's why we want to get it right. It's easy if we say CZ.
Okay.
K-A-C-Z.
Yes.
All right. But probably on your website we can find out about your email and your book as well. But it's important for people to have a variety of ways to get this information.
Thank you
for that. What was the biggest challenge to writing your book?
Dealing with controversy and keeping my personal opinions to myself. There was one profile that I did that I didn't expect to be controversial, and it turned out to be the most controversial one that I did. And this had to do with internet voting. And I never would have had any idea that this was controversial. But there's a company that I profiled, an organization that I profiled called Operation Bravo, and they are working to create internet voting systems for people that are overseas. For example, people who are serving the military who are overseas. And they've done it, and it's wonderful. And, I mean, I talked with some of the military personnel who have been thrilled to death to be able to vote from, you know, remote countries.
Sure.
Well, apparently, internet voting is incredibly controversial within some aspects of the technology computer science community.
Oh.
And I put a note about this project on LinkedIn one time just because I thought it was very interesting. And almost immediately I got email from some people who indicated that everybody knows that this is never going to work. That's what they said. And implying that I didn't know what I was talking about.
Okay.
And this is one of those cases where I just had to take a deep breath and not really say anything, because I had done years of research and talked to the people, so I know it's working, and there are many, many people out there who believe strongly in this, and they're technical, and they think it's going to work. And then there's an equally vocal, very passionate community that is against it, and it all gets tied up in politics at a national level, which I
sure.
got, you know, all, you know, involved in finding out about that I hadn't thought about it. And I, you know, it just, I'm not there to get sucked into what do I think about this.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Now, are the people who were opposed to it, who were sending you all these nasty messages, is this because they are doing research and they have counter research, or is this just their belief about the system not working in this way?
I think it really comes down to a philosophical belief, to, you know, people having perfectly valid different beliefs about whether this should be done and this should work and it can work. And it gets down to questions about how much security is enough, how much privacy
okay.
is enough, how much risk are we willing to take. And people just hold really different points of view on this.
And I'm wondering, when you were talking about this is being used for voting, excuse me, what's the alternative? In other words, if people are not voting, we're talking our service people overseas at remote areas, if they're not being able to vote this way through a program like Operation Bravo, how have they been voting, or what's the alternative?
What they told me that when I spoke to some of these people personally is that in some cases they haven't voted because they'd kind of given up. Because
mm-hmm.
there are mechanisms in place where theoretically you can vote through a combination of using the U.S. Postal Service and the Foreign Postal Service. Sometimes you can, there's a whole series of different mechanisms, but
mm-hmm.
what I was hearing was that you never really knew if the Postal Service was going to get your materials to you on time, you were going to get them back on time, whether they were going to be counted, and it just was it's a very frustrating experience for a lot of people.
Right, because I was thinking absentee voting is something that a lot of people do, even in this country.
Yeah.
When they are going to be unavailable or for some such reason during voting season. So I would think that that's no more secure than the system that the Operation Bravo people came up with. I mean, both of them, of course, security is going to always be an issue. But
mm-hmm.
I think you're right that there are going to be people for whom no amount of security is enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it gets into very interesting arguments, some of which – I did include in the chapter about what is the current system like and how secure is it and what are the current loopholes and what's it going to be with the internet, and that's where it gets. And it all gets into politics.
It eventually does.
Yeah, which is totally interesting. It just confuses everything.
It's interesting because I think if people are okay with a prior system, let's say like the absentee voting the way it was being done, and then you come up with a system that involves the internet, I think some people are just predisposed to be opposed to anything that's new and that involves
mm-hmm.
the internet. They just can't believe that it's going to be better or it's going to work. So
well, some of what that's super interesting is that, you know, there are people with very solid credentials, you know, technical computer science backgrounds on both
mm-hmm.
sides of this issue. So
mm-hmm.
it's nothing as simple as pro-technology, anti-technology.
Right,
It's people of good conscience who just feel very differently about it.
Yeah, and I suppose that's going to be true in a lot of situations. But fortunately, something like this does offer an alternative, especially for the people who want to, like in this situation, the people who wanted to vote in the past and were not able to do so. I
yes.
suppose to them, this is a great system.
Yes, and there's many interesting ways you can go with it. What they're working on now, and if we do a second edition of the book, I'll probably talk about this, is that they are now, Operation Bravo is now working on systems to bring remote internet voting to military personnel, wounded warriors in the United States, who, because
mm-hmm.
of some of what they are dealing with, are unable to go and vote in a traditional manner. And I think that's just incredible.
Okay, that's great. Now, what else can readers learn from reading about the people and the organizations in your book?
If you have a passion, follow it. There are role models and inspiration out there. If you have technical skills, you want to put them to good use for society, you actually can make a living out of doing this, you know, in the technology industry. And you don't have to go off and join the Peace Corps. However, I mean, I love the Peace Corps, but there are people who want, you know, a solid upper middle class lifestyle doing something like this, and you really can.
I was surprised at the amount of research that's going on in fields that perhaps we wouldn't think about. When I was writing my book, I discovered that there was a whole new field that had come up, positive psychology, and that they were teaming with Gallup and other agencies to do a tremendous amount of research all around the world and using, of course, computers in the process and coming up with results and solutions that have a bigger impact than just individual happiness.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you, 'cause I read something on your blog, I think, about that. You wrote something somewhere I saw about happiness, the happiness research is going on. What was it like to work with the people that you wrote about? You mentioned that if we have a passion, just follow it.
These people were incredible. These people get up every morning and they go to work excited and passionate, and it exudes off of them. When I would talk with them on the phone, and we would have Skype conversations, because I very rarely met them in person. Occasionally I did. But even remotely, just the energy that came off of these people, the excitement, it made me excited. It made me just really, whatever the topic was, I just wanted to be in the middle of it, because these people have so much energy. I mean, it was wonderful. This is probably the best project I've ever worked on in my entire life. And I would love to just keep doing, you know, things like this, talking to people who are using computers in this way and doing good things, and it was fantastic.
Was there, I'm sure some of these were small groups, villages, small cities that were helped in some way by computers. Can you think of one that was a small, comparatively speaking, city or place in the world that perhaps wouldn't have been able to get the progress they got without the computer?
Sure. The very first story in the book is about a poverty alleviation project that took place in the Peruvian Andes, about 15,000 feet high, and it was a collaboration between the Peruvians and some people from New Zealand. And this was, there are people that live up in the Andes, and they've had a very sustainable lifestyle for centuries. And things got disrupted for a variety of reasons, you know, in the last 50 years. And so the Peruvians and some computer scientists from New Zealand got together, went up there, really immersed themselves in the culture of these people who wanted to maintain their primary cultural values and come into the 21st century and be able to use computers to maintain their lifestyle, but not sink into poverty. And at the end of this project, they were able to do just that. They were able to keep their primary lifestyle. Some of it was herding, some of it was grazing, some of it was raising, you know, growing potatoes and things. But they were using computers in order to learn about how markets work and to learn about how best to deal with traders that came up from the mountains. That was a very moving story.
That's beautiful, because one of the things that I'm guessing that many people worry about is that when a computer comes in, modern technology comes in, that people are going to lose touch with their traditions, their cultural values. And this is a great example of how the computers, the technology is helping them to maintain their cultural values. Because you fall into poverty and you're not going to be able to do anything with any kind of values.
Right. And, in fact, it was the computer scientists who, in a way, changed the most, because they learned about the values of this other culture, and they learned how to adapt their approaches in order to work with these people. And they talked to me a lot about that and how much it changed their lives as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is what I'm imagining that happens. Both groups get changed. Both groups
yes.
gain respect for each other, learn about each other, and realize they really have to listen to each other in order to come up with the solution that works.
You
correct?
Got it, exactly. That
wow.
Yes, that is totally true. It's always a two-way street. And
wow.
that's one of the things that I think is critically important. It's not us telling them or them telling us. It's let's work together for mutual benefit here.
Right. Well, that is fantastic. Today we've been talking to Lisa Kaczmarczyk, who has been sharing with us what happens when computing puts humans first. And what we found out that happens is we get the improvement of the lives of the people that are being helped and the environment, as well as the computer scientists, the technologists who are working on these projects, they get changed as well. Thank you, Lisa, so much for joining us today. This has been great. I've enjoyed this so much.
So have I. Thanks, Laura.
Do you have any closing words as we're winding down the show?
I think I said it before. If you have a passion and follow it, just follow your gut. And things will work out well.
Thank you so much. I want to remind listeners this show was brought to you today by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers who want to write a book to attract more clients and increase profits. You can get your copy of the 7-Step Roadmap to Publishing Success, now available as an instant download at abookin90days.com. I want to urge all of you who have been enlightened, encouraged, empowered by today's episode to share what you've learned with your family, friends, and colleagues. Remember, the recording of the episode is available on my show page, blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, where you can return at any time to hear it. I invite you to join me again next Monday, May 21st, 2012, at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. It promises to be another informative and exciting show. I'm Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. And as always, I'm going to ask you to have a blessed week and remember to color your life happy.
Color, color your life happy.
Color.